This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
It's been a minute.
It has been a little while. Hello and welcome to another edition of the, Mizzou Sports Podcast. Yeah, it is. My name is Danny Jones, and Cam Teague Robinson is here with me. We're here to talk some basketball. We're here to talk some football. A lot of things going on in the world of Mizzou sports these days. We had National Signing Day yesterday on Wednesday. We have the Bragging Rights game coming up in 2 days on Saturday in St. Louis. The basketball team has made some really positive strides in the last couple weeks, and they're now 9-2.
Yes.
9-2. The women's basketball team also doing well. They're ranked. They have a game coming up tomorrow at noon. So a lot of things to talk about, Cam. And you kind of held down the fort last week as I was out of town.
Yep.
So what was the most exciting thing that happened last week while you were literally manning the sports department by yourself?
Let me think. Oh, without a doubt, it was Jordan Geist's 28-point explosion.
Jordan Geist.
Yeah, 100%. I was like, what? Where is this coming from?
What would the odds have been on that being the most surprising thing or the most exciting thing that happened over the week?
Very slim. Like, I don't know. It was to the point where in the game it was such a blowout. I was just like, I'm just waiting for Jordan Geist to get his career high so I can start writing. And his career high was like 18, and then he just blew it out of the water with 28. He was tremendous that game. But I think that was probably the most exciting thing. I think pretty cool that we actually finally got a chance to talk to Terry Beckner at the football practice.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. He will be coming back next year.
Yeah.
Still
yep.
waiting to hear on Drew Locke. We're yep. not sure. But real quick before we get into basketball, Jordan Geist. You can see how I easily confused the two.
Yeah, they're just the both of them.
They are, exactly. But Jordan Geist, his explosion this season. What was your like impression of Jordan Geist when in this offseason, right before the season started?
Solid seventh, eighth man. I mean, just a guy you come in and just say, hey, guard, just play some defense when you're on the floor and take control, take care of the ball. That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't think he would bring really any offense to this team. I mean, at this point, though, I mean, last year they shot terribly, so you were like, who's going to do anything offensively?
Yeah.
But I didn't expect what he's been this year. He's been tremendous for them. I mean, he's turned the ball over a little bit too much,
mm-hmm.
but, I mean, everybody on this team has. He's been tremendous. His ability to knock down shots at a consistent rate is the biggest thing.
Yeah, pretty surprising.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's kind of been the case for the whole team. I will say, so I was on vacation in Colorado. They haven't heard of Jordan Geist out there. His word hasn't traveled very far.
They're missing out.
Not that Colorado is a big college basketball place, but his evolution has been one of the most interesting developments of this basketball season, I think, and the responsibility that he's had. Mm-hmm. He's basically been the starting point guard for most of the season when Missouri needs their best point guard out on the floor.
Right, yeah, he was the guy on the floor at the end of the game against Stephen F. Austin.
It wasn't
Blake Harris. It was
for like
Jordan
the last 5 minutes of the game.
Right, and somebody asked Konzo after the game, said, so why do you trust Jordan Geist? And Konzo goes, Geist is a guy taking a back alley with me. That was just the funniest thing.
Just like that.
Yeah, he's just, you could see Konzo really trust Jordan Geist to, whether, I mean, no matter what his numbers are, he's going to trust him on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else have you learned about this basketball team through this homestand that they've had? Their homestand is now done. They had four straight games at home, won all four of them.
Yep.
Stephen F. Austin was close,
right.
But that's a team that I'd imagine would be pretty good.
Right, and they'll make whether they pull an upset in the NCAA tournament or not, they're going to make some team very worried in a first-round matchup because just the rate that they force you to turn the ball over is just incredible.
Yeah.
And the way they double-team ball screens and everything, it's going to get in a lot of guards' heads.
Yeah.
You have to have some pretty good bigs who can pass the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I thought that was a good win for Mizzou. But I don't know. I think the big thing, one, you saw Jeremiah Tillman grow. Like, you really saw his growth consistently. He's not getting dumb fouls. Like, you truly see him just standing there, straight up holding his arms. He's not flailing anymore, not trying to block everything. So you see that growth. I thought the biggest thing was Jordan Barnett and Cassius Robertson. I mean, we sat here after MPJ injury, and we go, like, who's Mizzou's go-to guy now? Like, who's there, like, you need a basket, give it to him? And I think he's Jordan Barnett. I mean, he's been incredible as of late. I think he's averaging somewhere like 18 points a game the last seven games.
And yeah,
like,
you said.
And like 7 or 8 rebounds.
Yeah.
He's been incredible.
Like, he's like playing out of his mind, right? Basically.
And, I mean, he's been tremendous for this team. So I think that's the biggest thing. And Cassius, too. It's good to see those guys consistently put points on the board. I mean, they did it a little bit earlier this year, but both of them kind of got in a slump at the same time. But it's nice to see them break out of that and consistently put points on the board.
Would you agree or disagree if I told you that the moment of the year so far has been Cassius Robertson in the post-game press conference describing the last play of the game?
Oh, 100% game. Moment of the year. Yeah, 100%. That was the best thing ever.
So, quick recap. Cassius Robertson goes to the free throw line. Mizzou up one with, what, 5 seconds to go?
13
seconds to go. Okay. Yeah. Chance to put Mizzou up three.
Right.
Misses.
An 80% free throw shooter.
Misses both free throws.
Right.
Then Stephen F. Austin gets the rebound. No timeouts with 13 seconds left or something like
that. Yeah, it was ticking. I think it was probably like 7 or something like that point.
It was enough to like gather the ball and go down the floor.
Right. And they had a chance to run a play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Down 1 point.
Yeah.
Cassius Robertson forces a steal, like kind of gets his hand in the passing lane, forces a steal.
And then the mindset enough to jump on the ball, not foul, not get a loose ball foul, and call a timeout.
Yes. Mizzou's been burned on that sort of thing before.
Right.
Like an overeager foul in a moment where you can't have an overeager foul.
Right.
What did Cassius say after the game?
Well, Gabe DeArmond from Power Mizzou asked him, so like, just kind of what were you thinking? And he goes, I had to do something. he had to have all these thoughts in his mind. He just goes, man, I know. Shit. I don't know.
And if you aren't watching Facebook Live, Konzo Martin's reaction, it was like he had been woken from a coma. Yeah. He looked up and he started laughing. And
it was so funny, man. Cassius is one of those, he's very animated. You wouldn't tell it because he's very serious, very focused on the floor. But he's just he's a good interview, good guy to have at the podium. But, I mean, he knew he had to make a play. And then later in the press conference, he goes, I'm glad I made the play. It would have made it worse if I didn't make that play and I missed both free throws and we lost. He goes, it saved me from locking myself in my room for a week.
Konzo say something to the effect of he had to get over it? Or what did Konzo was asked about the play too?
Yeah, I asked him, like, what does it say about Cassius' like mental ability to get over it real quick? And Konzo goes, he better got over it. He goes, no, really, he better got over that. Then he goes on to say, like, because that's basketball. Like, you miss shot. He's like, he needed to make the free throws. But you miss the free throws, you got to make another play.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes on to say he made a really good play on that ball, seriously. Konzo goes, yeah, he better have made a play. That was funny.
So what do you see in this Bragging Rights game? It's Illinois 8-5. They haven't been all that impressive this year, I don't think. They've lost 5 of their last 7 games. Their only wins in that stretch were against Austin Peay and Longwood.
Yep.
Longwood might even be Division II, that doesn't sound like a Division I school.
No.
They lost to New Mexico State on the 16th. They also lost to UNLV. They lost to Maryland, Northwestern, Wake Forest. They did play North Carolina Central, and they won that game. That name registers with some Mizzou fans. That happened on November 24th earlier this year. So Illinois, maybe not as potent as a lot of people thought going into this year, but I guess how do they match up with Mizzou?
They're another team that's got pressure the mess out of the ball. I mean, they're one of those, if I remember right, and I have the tab open on the computer. I'm just not getting up to go look at it. But on KenPom, they're somewhere in the top. They're without a doubt a top 20 team in turnover rate.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say they're forcing teams to turn over the ball at plus 20% ratio. I think they're averaging, what?
They force 19.5 turnovers a game, and they give up almost 15.
Right, and Stephenoff, now to comparison, Stephenoff lost in force 22 turnovers a game, and they've led the country in turnover rate and they're second in steals. So this Illinois team is going to pressure the ball. It's not the same as like a West Virginia team that full court presses you, or a Stephenoff Austin team that doubles you on every ball screen on top of the key. So they do different things, a lot of denying the ball, and they have talented guards. Mark Smith is a tremendous guard, was a top 100 recruit coming out of his time in St. Louis, some school.
He was at, I believe it was Edwardsville.
I was going to say Evansville, but that Edwardsville.
Edwardsville.
Right. He's a tremendous guard. He's kind of finding his way as well. Konzo said he actually recruited LaRon Black.
LaRon Black, the leading scorer.
Right, when he was coming out of high school, but obviously he went to Illinois instead. That was back when Konzo was at Tennessee. So talented guards, guys who are going to kind of get after it. Very tough. Konzo describes them as hard-nosed guys. So I think it'd be a good game. I think it'd be another game for Mizzou's guards to really kind of show what kind of growth they've made. It's not going to get harder than what West Virginia and Stephenoff Austin gave you. I mean, you're talking about trying to compare those two to anybody else. Those are two of the best ball pressure teams in the country, without a doubt. But with the atmosphere that's going to be there, it's going to be a big game for them. I do think Mizzou is probably the favorite, just because their size and side is just way too much for Illinois. I don't think they have anybody to compare with what Jeremiah, Jonte, or even Reed can give them in the post. The big thing for Jeremiah will be just containing his energy and staying in control. I mean,
that's every game though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but this game, much. This game be a little
think,
more.
I don't think even like against Green Bay and North Florida, like Konzo's talking to Jeremiah, like, okay, Jeremiah,
yeah,
we need you to play level, okay,
right.
Like keep it together, a little
right? But I mean, you're talking about this game. The second he steps on the court, they're gonna be booing him. That's something he hasn't seen this year.
That's true.
And I mean, the Kansas game, Kansas fans are booing everyone. I mean, the Illinois game is going to be booing Jeremiah Tillman every time he gets the ball. It's something he's going to have to prepare for. And they were asking somebody asked Jordan Barnett today in the press conference, like, how do you prepare for that? And Jordan was just like, hey, you got to go through it. But they believe Jeremiah would be fine. I'm really interested to see kind of how he reacts to all this.
It'll be
and the backstory behind that, for people who don't know, quickly, Jeremiah Tillman was originally committed to Illinois.
He's St. Louis guy.
Yeah.
He's from Illinois.
Yeah, decommitted when John Gross got fired, and then committed to Mizzou in May.
And you did a story on Jeremiah last week that was really interesting. Basically, what you found out was he wanted to go to Illinois since he was a kid.
Right.
That was like his dream school.
Yeah, like one of his coaches from middle school, one of the coaches that kind of – his high school coach in St. Louis when he first got there, he was telling me that Jeremiah had always – he had dreamed about being on like a billboard on I-55 in an Illinois jersey, and obviously things changed a little bit. But this would be a big game for him. And even Jordan Barnett, is his first time. This is last chance to play in a bragging rights game. It's only a second, but he's a St. Louis kid.
Yep.
So that'd be a big game for him as well.
Yeah, it was his second game last year, and he was kind of like the main figure in that game for Mizzou going into it. A lot of people were. Talking about his impact and what he was going to do. So now he enters as basically the guy. A lot of people expected him to be the guy last year, but it took him a while, almost all season, to kind of accept that role and become a bigger impact player. And this year he's done it a lot quicker. So there'll be two guys that are obviously really important for Mizzou in this game, and this will be big. I mean, we've been talking about the buildup since – Jeremiah Tillman committed in May, and even without him, I mean, Konzo's an East St. Louis guy, right. So he has ties to Illinois. I think it's interesting that Konzo, despite growing up in East St. Louis and growing up in Illinois, has, since he's been here, maybe this is just politics, basically said, Missouri's always been home to me. That's what he said.
Well, and he was talking about it today. Somebody asked him, like, if... has he ever been to a bragging rights game? He said, never. And never been to one. Not one. And I go, wow. He said Illinois was really his team that he rooted for, really just when he was older, kind of like in high school. And then he went to Purdue. So then he was just like, I mean, I stopped being an Illinois fan. Then he went to coaching and all that stuff. So it doesn't seem – maybe, like you said, maybe it is just politics, but it doesn't seem like he has a very close emotional – tie to this game.
Yeah.
Unlike, say, the Jordan Barnetts or the Kevin Purriers of the world.
Yeah.
Those two guys specifically, very, very emotionally tied to this game. Like, they want a good outcome out of this. Kanzo, obviously, he wants a win, but it's not the same type of emotional tie to this game.
Kanzo, not the kind of guy for emotions.
Yeah, true.
He did kind of make rounds around the internet for what he did after the game when he went into the Stephen F. Austin locker room.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Yeah, Kanzo's an interesting guy.
He is an interesting
guy. We were talking
guy.
About this before we got on the podcast. Like, I'd like to just sit down and talk with him. Like, just not even about basketball or even for a story, just about life.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to be able to call up Kanzo Martin and be like, hey, man, my life sucks. Give me some advice.
He seems to be somebody who you could trust to help through a big decision.
Yeah,
he just 100%. Has that kind of feel to him.
Yeah.
He's been through a lot, obviously.
Yeah.
He's a pretty worldly guy.
Yeah.
But,
If you got some family issues or something like that and you're going through a hard time, I feel like if you called Kanzo, he'd be able to tell you, like,
complete stranger if you called Kanzo.
Yeah.
Kanzo says, what
are you, sit down, man. What are you talking? What's going on? And you'd walk out of there feeling like so much better. I feel like I don't know.
I feel so much wiser.
Exactly.
Conversation like that. Yeah. Definitely an interesting guy.
Yeah.
And
he's done wonders with this program so far.
Yeah.
Coach Kyle Keller from Stephen F. Austin said in the press conference, like, he did a good job meshing Kim's guy with the recruits, mentioning how difficult that truly is. I mean, they got a chance to be 11-2 going into non-con. Going into conference play.
Of Coach Keller, Stephen F. Austin.
Best.
So let's talk real quick
about
that experience.
He's very animated. Like, you ask him a question, he'll just go on for 5 minutes, and he won't even answer the question. He's so funny.
What was his best quote? What was his best? I mean, he had 50 different stories.
Yeah. Yeah. His best one, to me at least, was when he was talking about Jordan Barnett.
Yeah.
Somebody asked him, like, what they did in the second half, and he was like, he goes, the guys may not have really liked my halftime conversation to them. He goes, I just didn't think we were tough enough with Jordan Barnett, and he goes, I told them, I said, hey, you guys know that 21? Somebody should kind of stand near him.
Literally what everybody says on TV.
Exactly.
Guard that guy.
Exactly.
Well, who's guarding that guy?
He then looked down at his shirt and goes, yeah, I broke my cufflink talking about Barnett. And goes on to say, he goes, my wife asked me about my shirt, and she said, what happened to your shirt? And I said, Barnett. She goes, I understand. He's so funny, man. He's a character for sure.
On Twitter, I was trying to find it here just a second ago. Apparently, and you probably remember this, but Gabe Dierman tweeted that on the final play, Coach Keller said, we'd shot our wad to get it to where it was.
He mentioned that, like, just that they ran out of gas towards the end a lot. But that was just, he's a character, man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, he's funny. He went on for about 15 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys didn't get, like, an interview in. Until, or get the stories in, you didn't get it done until after 11 o'clock.
Right, I was really pushing deadline.
Yeah. But, yeah. Do you have any other thoughts on this basketball team?
No, I think, I mean, just in general, I think they're playing very good basketball right now. I mean, they have a chance to be 11-2 going into conference play, like I said. I mean, if you take that even with Michael Porter Jr., you're like, okay, that's good. That's a solid start. That's a solid start to the year.
Yeah.
Conference play would be a whole different animal. I mean, you got a set schedule. This is where you're playing, what is it, Tuesday, Saturday. On the road, big games. It's going to be a whole different animal for this team, how they bounce back from different difficult losses. Playing on the road in conference play is totally different than playing on the road in non-con play. So I think we'll learn a lot about this team in the first few games of the conference schedule. But I think what we've seen so far is very promising. I said it when Michael Porter got hurt. I thought this was still an NCAA tournament team. I think you're still looking at a tournament team. Now, obviously, they got to pick up some marquee wins. I think the St. John's win will eventually be big. The UCF win will eventually be big. But I think they still got – I think they're off to a good start. Still some work to do, though.
Real quick before we transition to football, I think we're probably obligated to at least mention Michael Porter in this, and he did just. But Kanzo actually was asked about him in, what was it, today's press conference?
After the Stephen F. Austin game. Yeah.
So he's been on the bench.
Right. Sometimes he was in the locker room against North Florida. I mean, there's been pictures of him shooting around before games, and Kanzo said, yes, he's shooting around, but he's not, like, playing. He's not practicing. He's not doing anything. I mean, he said, yes, Michael can shoot a little bit.
So,
pretty much is what he said. That's not a quote, but that's pretty much what he said.
There is some frustration in having to spend so much energy
I mean,
trying to follow the actions of somebody who doesn't even look close to playing.
Right, exactly.
As there is frustration from Konzo Martin, who constantly has to answer questions in every press conference about a guy who's really part of the team, but not part of the team.
Right, right.
And, you know, he's on the bench, he's in the locker room. Right. Konzo said, so some days he's in the locker room,
right,
just hanging. So he's watching the game from the locker room, but it doesn't look like he's close to coming back.
Right, yeah, it's pretty much just how he feels, Konzo said. He did say with how long he sat on the bench at Stephen F. Austin game, it's maybe promising that he's not, that I guess that he's getting better. Mm-hmm. Not promising that he's going to be on the court in 2 weeks,
right,
but that maybe that he's getting better. But he made sure to say that he's just rehabbing right now. He's not practicing. He can shoot around a little bit, like before games and stuff like that, but he's not shooting around like in practice. He's just rehabbing, and if you see him on the bench, it means he's feeling well that day. If he's in a locker room, sometimes it means his back's hurting a little bit. So he made sure to say that he's still in the rehab process.
What'd you think of his shoes, Gold Jordans?
I didn't even see him.
You didn't? No, it must have been on TV.
Yeah.
He was wearing, gold Jordans.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm into a bad.
They had a close-up of it. I mean, it was like...
Really?
Face of Michael Porter Jr. down to the shoes. Close-up of the shoes.
People were saying that, like they pan over to see Michael's reaction after, like, every play.
It was a lot, and that was, I mean, he was on the bench for the Stephen F. Austin
game, not the North Florida game.
Right, because they were showing, but yeah, it was, they were, like, they'd make a basket. And
pan over, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's our
Michael Ring.
Michael Porter allotment for the day.
Yeah.
And so, no real news.
No real news.
But we did what we had to do.
Yeah,
as journalists.
We don't spew the fake news.
That's right.
No alternative facts.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so yesterday was for the football team.
Signing day.
National signing day.
Well, early signing period day, whatever you want to call it.
One of the longest days of the year for anybody involved in college football. If you're a coach, if you're a fan, if you cover the team, if you're in a recruit, it's just a long day. There's a lot going on. Pretty stressful.
Yeah.
If you're covering it, if you're trying to make sure everybody's on the same page, if you're a player that's about to literally sign their life away, stressful day for everybody.
Yeah.
In the end, Mizzou got 16 guys yesterday. There hasn't been any more that have signed today, even though the signing period is open until Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So they made a bunch of additions at wide receiver. 5 wide receivers signed. They had 2 defensive backs sign yesterday. They had 2 offensive linemen sign yesterday, a couple of running backs, so they added a lot of speed. Last year, Tramell Rags has been blowing up our comments.
Oh, I was just looking wide, because the thing was refreshing.
Yeah, it does that every once in a while.
Yeah.
Tramell, a couple compliments, and he says, we appreciate the great recruiting coverage. So, okay.
Yeah, we got your back.
Thanks. Yeah, appreciate your compliment. Anyway, that looked like a question when I first saw it, which is why I stopped.
Yeah. Maybe, the hashtag probably.
If you have a question, you can leave a question.
yeah, please do.
Anyway.
Yeah, for our 4 followers, 3 who aren't Tramell Rags.
So, last year's signing day was a lot of defensive linemen, especially at tackle. This year's was a lot of speed.
Yep.
And just they had a lot of receivers in this class. They had a couple last year that didn't pan out. Deron Davis didn't qualify. Noshe Clark transferred right after the season started in the fall. So they didn't have any receivers from last year's signing class make it. So then that was a position they really went after this time. But all things considered, I think it's a pretty good class for Missouri. Their ranking in the SEC is a little bit higher than what it's been since they've joined the league. I mean, they're pretty much always in the bottom third.
Right.
But this year they're kind of in the 9-10 range, I think, but according to most of the recruiting services, they did what they've almost always done. They went after guys who didn't have a lot of great offers. They did get a couple of guys that had SEC offers, but a lot of the guys who signed yesterday were guys that didn't have a lot of other SEC offers or a lot of other Power 5 offers.
Like a Larry Roundtree type.
Right, yeah. Exactly. But guys that had a lot of speed. So that's something that Gary Pinkel always went after. So they did get a lot of speed in their class yesterday. And just like any signing day, the coach is excited, but you have to kind of wait and see how they develop. Okay, we do have a question.
Tramell did ask a question. He asked, where does Missouri need to improve the most in order to compete for an SEC title? SEC East title.
SEC East title.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
It is a good question.
It has to be on the defensive
end. It has to be on the defensive end.
I would say probably their defensive line is pretty solid. Yeah. It'll be really good next year
with
Terry Beckner.
Allie to be on the line, you'd imagine.
Yeah, Rashad Brandon's coming back too. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day who said that they think Rashad Brandon could get drafted next year.
I thought when he was on the field, he was tremendous.
Yeah.
He didn't play much, but when he was out there, I thought he always made a difference.
Yeah.
That defensive line could be really good. I think people are going to really like what Jordan Elliott brings up here.
Yeah. I heard about that. That was a storyline that kind of happened while I was gone.
Right, yeah.
That he kind of surfaced.
Yeah.
Transfer from Texas.
Yeah.
So,
5-star guy.
They'll have Kobe Whiteside, Walter Palmore. They'll have Chris Turner back. They'll have Trey Williams will be back next year.
He's ready to emerge at the end of this year.
Yeah, Trey Williams might end up being a force next year.
Yeah.
He was all freshman team.
I think they'll be loaded up there.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably looking, probably the secondary.
I would say the secondary too. Secondary is, that was another area. They didn't get all the signatures yesterday. Maybe tomorrow. You're kind of running out of time today on Thursday.
Right.
It's already 3:45. So
you'd imagine everybody who signed would have signed by now.
Yeah.
Unless
they're doing it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so maybe they'll have a couple guys that'll sign tomorrow. But I would say the secondary has to be better. They have to be a better pass.
Right.
When the ball's in the air, they have to do better.
Right.
They did improve by the end of the year, but I think it's a tough question because obviously the pass defense really suffered this year. It wasn't very good, but at times the run defense wasn't very good either.
Right.
And so maybe that means like at linebacker you have to do some other things differently. Maybe a little bit more speed at linebacker.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say that that's not a hole necessarily. Mm-hmm. Obviously, other teams in the SEC have a lot better. Like you look at Georgia and Auburn, and the teams that are really, really good in the SEC have really good linebacker.
6'6", 280-pound, 4'5", monsters. Yeah.
Monsters. A human being walking down the street with those proportions, you would walk to the other side of the street.
1,000%.
Yeah. They're just typical players in the SEC. So, the secondary is definitely one. And from what I've heard, so the two guys in the secondary that signed yesterday, Tyrone Collins and Jarvis Ware,
mm-hmm.
both of them are from Florida. The scouting report that I've heard on Tyrone Collins is he's 5'10", 5'11", so not a very big guy. Kind of goes away from the big cornerback trend that Mizzou was really going after last year and under Damani Cross.
Mm-hmm.
But really fast, great closing speed, and a pretty physical guy. Jarvis Ware is probably a guy that needs a little bit of work when he gets in, I would imagine, but he is a bigger guy at 6'1". The three guys who did not sign they had three defensive backs that did not sign. One of them was Chris Mills. And from one of the people that I was talking to, a scout, they thought Chris Mills was the best corner, like defensive back in the class.
Really?
So he hasn't signed yet. Another one was Wheat. I can't remember his first name. Tyrus Wheat, maybe. Right. Tyrus Wheat from Louisiana. He plays safety. He's like listed at 6'1", 230, 240
Jesus
pounds.
Christ.
Yeah, as a safety.
That's a big boy.
That is. Solid guy. Obviously, you can imagine what he does to people running across the middle of the field. So both of those guys, if they end up signing, will be impact players too. So that was definitely a direction that they deliberately moved in, was we're going to go and get guys in the secondary that will help.
Now, what's the deal? Like, regardless if Drew Locke leaves or not, Mizzou needs a quarterback in this class. Have you heard or do you know anything about what they're going to do there in terms of the class?
So they have sent out an offer to the guy from
East.
I believe it's East Mississippi State where they had
Last Chance U.
And I'll have to go back and look up his name. I remember that happened either right before I left or while I was gone.
Yeah.
I saw that news. So that's an option. They could go JUCO and bring a guy in. Obviously, everybody's still waiting on Drew Locke's decision. I'm pretty sure it all comes down to his draft grade.
Right.
And whenever that comes back, I don't know if there's a timeline on when that will come back.
Well, Drew did say that he was going to wait till after the bowl game to make any kind of decision regardless. And that the bowl decision, the outcome wasn't going to dictate if he was leaving or not.
Yeah.
But, I mean, regardless, you would need a quarterback. Either if Drew's going to leave, you need a quarterback to step in right away. Regardless, if Drew stays, you need a quarterback to kind of mold as you kind of grow.
Yes.
As you kind of progress towards the next few seasons.
Yeah.
So,
I see. I think the other thing too, and so the scout that I was talking to, who's actually he works with college teams to provide scouting reports, he was actually really optimistic about Taylor Powell, the redshirt freshman, and Michael Wilson.
Yeah,
he seemed to think that those guys could, you know, be very capable.
Drew was pretty high on Micah the other day when we talked to him as well.
Yeah. Micah does a lot of things differently. He's a runner much as he is a thrower, I think, which would change what Missouri does on offense. But Drew's been playing quarterback coach, basically. Right. So that'll you know, it's interesting to get his perspective as a coach as opposed to just a quarterback. Okay.
Don't read that question.
We do.
Don't read that question. Don't read that question. We don't need to read that question.
I feel obligated to. Nick Kelly is our former intern. He's about to come back to us as a part-time
reporter. You're supposed to be enjoying your break, Nick.
Up in Minnesota. Is it cold up there? The question says, if Drew Locke does declare for the draft, will the soon-to-be 0-16 Browns pick
he
him?
He means 1-15.
So the Browns are 0-14.
Yeah.
Who are their last two games against?
Bears this weekend, which they're going to win because I'm going to be in Cleveland.
Okay, we have to stop again. You're on vacation.
Yeah, Sunday. Sunday morning, I will fly out of St. Louis.
And you are going to Cleveland.
I'm hopping off my plane, getting in a car with friends, and going downtown Cleveland.
The first thing you're doing on vacation is going to watch the Browns
play. Of course.
This sounds like the worst vacation in the history of vacations.
It's the best. People who think it's terrible don't know what downtown Cleveland is like when the Browns play. It's just a mass of depression. And you can just all be depressed together. It's so much fun. But we're going to win, so it's not going to be depressing. Everybody's going to be flooding the streets of Cleveland, chanting Super Bowl. That's what Browns fans do when we win football games.
If they go 0-16, are you going to the parade?
No, that's stupid. We shouldn't have a parade.
I think you should celebrate a historic event.
No.
So you're telling me that you would like to go back and participate in a collective depression, but you don't want an 0-16 parade?
No, we're going to win. 1-15. We're going to beat the Bears.
Okay.
Nick did actually say something else. And here you're criticizing me for how I'm spending my birthday. Okay. Goodbye, Nick. Close the tab.
Well said. So, going back to Drew Locke, we're waiting on his decision.
Right.
Well, I don't know. One person I talked to today, his name is Eric Edholm. He's from, I believe it's Pro Football Weekly.
Yes.
Does writing there. One interesting comparison, we're talking about Drew Locke. We're talking about his draft status and, what he does really well. A name that popped up in that conversation, a comparison, and I didn't really think about it at all until he said that. Jay Cutler.
Oh, yeah.
With Drew Locke. What do you see? Because when he said that, I had never thought about those two. But after hearing that comparison, I think it makes a lot of sense. Jay Cutler has a big arm, obviously. Yep. Like, that's kind of always been his thing in the NFL. Tends to throw some interceptions. Drew Locke's done a lot better about not throwing interceptions the back half of the year, but that was definitely a part of his game that you just had to live with through his sophomore year and early part of this year. Jay Cutler, when he was in college, ran for almost 1,300 yards.
Yeah.
So he was a huge runner then, more so than Drew Locke is now. Yeah, but what do you think about that comparison? Does it register with you?
I think so. I mean, especially when you look at, the biggest similarity for them is just their arm.
Drew
has a monster arm. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see Drew make some throws, and we watch practice pretty much every time they practice this last 2 weeks, pretty much. He makes some throws, and you're just like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, this kid has an NFL arm.
Yeah.
But again, there are those times where he just makes some bad decisions. Please don't disrespect Jay Cutler.
Okay. Chicago Bears legend,
right.
Jay Cutler.
I think there's some times where he just makes some bad throws, some bad decisions, and usually, especially on the back half of the season, they've come early in games. Then you kind of see him settle down. But I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting. I went back and looked at the stats. Drew Locke has thrown for a lot more yards and a lot more touchdowns, but he's also had a lot better team around him than Jay Cutler did. Jay Cutler never won more than 5 games at Vanderbilt in a season. So I thought it was an interesting comparison, and I don't know, maybe we'll see what Drew Locke's future has in store. We're really struggling with our Facebook Live.
Yeah, I don't know why it's refreshing so long.
Yeah, well,
I kind of want to get up and refresh it and see what happens.
Why don't you give it a shot?
All right.
We'll continue the podcast.
Yeah, you keep talking.
Okay. So the other, this will be our last podcast before the bowl game in Houston.
Well, we'll do one after the bragging rights game.
We will.
But it's just kind of like a recap of the bragging rights.
Kind of a, yeah, that's true. You'll be in Cleveland after the bragging rights game. So we'll kind of spend a little bit of time preparing for that game. The Facebook Live has ended, apparently. But with this bowl game coming up, it'll be an interesting matchup in a lot of ways because you kind of have two teams with totally different mentalities going into this game.
Should I just forget it?
Maybe. Maybe we'll just post something afterward.
Yeah, I'm just going to forget it. It's just not being. And that'll take me like 10 minutes to figure out.
But two teams kind of going in different directions philosophy-wise. So Texas has at least three, if not, I believe they have actually four guys who are not going to play in the bowl game. Right. Guys with pretty high draft stock that aren't going to play. Their best offensive lineman, Connor Williams, their two best cornerbacks are both sitting out, and then they'll have one other impact player sitting out. So Mizzou, everybody's coming back. Even if Drew Locke gets a draft grade, he's going to play in the game. Terry Beckner has already said he's coming back next year, so he's going to play in the game. So you kind of have like a Mizzou team that feels like they have a lot to play for in terms of getting to 8-5. It's like a goal that the team has. Whereas Texas, 6-6, doesn't really feel like they have a lot that they're playing for. I don't think the matchup means as much to Texas as it does to Mizzou.
And that's the thing with bowl games, because it's pretty much the team who wants it.
Yeah.
I mean, bowl games are a time to celebrate. It's like, whoever is down there and actually wants to play football is usually going to win the football game.
Yeah.
And like you said, Mizzou has a ton to play for. I know Barry talks about that 8-5, his significance, historical significance a lot with that group.
Yeah, I have a slight bone to pick with that 8-5 comment. So okay. I've even reached out to Mizzou about this to make sure, but what keeps getting bandied about is that that's never happened before in college football history.
Right.
Not quite true. It's never happened before for a Power 5 team.
Right, which is why I didn't write about it the other day. I was like, that doesn't sound right.
It has happened before in Division 1A. North Texas did it and Rutgers did it. Rutgers did it when it was a member of the Big East. So it has happened before in college football history. It has not happened before in the history of Power 5 teams. So not to say it's not historic. It is historic. It's still a fairly big deal that you're the first Power 5 team to ever do that. Right. But the fact that it's not necessarily the first time it's ever happened in college football. But yeah, I agree 100% with what you're saying, that bowl games often come down to who really wants to play and who really doesn't want to be there, because yeah, I think Mizzou feels like they have a lot to play for and Texas probably doesn't.
Right.
So I think that'll be a big storyline coming into this game. And I think the other thing, like Mizzou under Gary Pinkel in like the last 20 years or so has had a lot of success at bowl games. Their record under Gary Pinkel in bowl games was really good. And that I think he just did a really good job of making those bowl games feel really important.
Yeah.
Because if you're a team like Mizzou, you go to those bowl games and the storyline probably starting from the epicenter of the program with Gary Pinkel has always been, we have to earn our respect.
Right.
Almost like ad nauseum, where you enter every season and Mizzou feels really disrespected, whatever. That's probably, I think, something that Gary Pinkel instilled in the program a little bit. Hey, you have to go to these bowl games and prove yourself. You're constantly feeling like you have to prove yourself.
Right, and I mean, that's probably, I mean, I would agree with you. I would imagine, especially Drew, I mean, other than that all-SEC first-team honor, I mean, like, what guy leads the nation in touchdown passes and just doesn't get talked about outside of just SEC honors?
Right.
For the most part, you know what I mean? So I imagine they do have that feel. There's that motivation. I mean, there's a motivation with Ellerby and Heupel leaving. They obviously feel like they need to prove themselves that, like, our offense wasn't good because Ellerby and Heupel were here.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So they obviously have something to prove there. I mean, there's a lot of motivation. You could pick kind of whatever. Barry said it the other day. Just, we could kind of pick whatever kind of motivation we want out of this game. It's Texas. It's a former Big 12 opponent.
Right.
Like,
right.
There's so much for that group to kind of be motivated for. I don't think they're going to go down there and just be like, we're glad to be here in Houston.
Right.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of teams that are going to be in bowl season with that kind of mentality. I don't think Mizzou's going to be one of them.
Nope, I agree.
That game is on December 27th at 8 o'clock Central Time. Hopefully it'll be warm in Houston.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping.
It won't be warm enough in Cleveland.
Now, is it ever warm in Cleveland? Is it ever in the history of Cleveland?
During the summers are pretty terrible.
Really?
Like, hot-wise. Like, there used to be summers where we used to go weeks without it being under 100. Seriously.
Weeks?
Yeah. Okay, like, okay, a week maybe. Like, when or at least when I was playing soccer, it felt like it was over 100 every week. But no, there are times where it would climb up above 100 in Cleveland over the summer. So it gets pretty hot. It's just not as humid as it is here. But during the winter, it's like under 20 degrees every day, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. And when it snows, thankfully it's not going to snow when I'm home.
Yeah.
Or it's supposed to.
I feel like that could change it anyway.
Yeah,
moment.
Exactly. Mm. But yeah, it's not fun.
All right, one thing we didn't do last time. Do you have a recommendation of the week? If you don't, I can fill the time while you think.
Yeah, you fill the time, let me think.
Okay, I have two. So, I was gone last week. I went to Colorado. I have some friends that live there. Went skiing for the first time in like 7 years.
Really?
It was great.
I was talking to somebody, and they were like, is Danny skiing in Colorado? I go, I hope not, because I need him back here healthy.
I avoided almost every tree. I did crash one time. A friend and I both hit the same exact rock, and we both crashed in the same spot. Ooh. No major injuries, good. So it was a great time. So I would recommend take a vacation. It's good for you,
mm-hmm.
and if you're looking for a place to go, it's pretty fun to go to Colorado. Actually, they don't have a lot of snow there right now, so really? That was kind of an issue.
Maybe Cleveland won't have snow either then.
Yeah, I don't know. The North has been getting hammered with snow,
yeah,
like Michigan. And, the other recommendation, while I was there, I was reading this book, and then I started watching the movie called Into the Wild. I don't know if you've ever heard of this
book. I have.
It's about this guy who was born to a well-to-do family, basically gives away all his money and hitchhikes to Alaska.
Oh.
Really,
I have heard that.
Interesting. It's a movie, if you've seen the movie. But the
was
book
he like in high school
too.
When he left?
He just had graduated college.
I literally talked to somebody about that the other day, I think.
Was it me?
No, it wasn't you. No, it wasn't
really?
Me. Yeah, I know who it was, but I'm not going to mention their name. But we were talking about that movie, the book, the other day, because they read the book.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just finished it. It was a good book. I recommend it. I like those books. I'm a fan of, like, nonfiction adventure books.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's a good time. It goes by pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But I will say it is kind of sad.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
Yeah. I mean, you probably know how it ends. Like, yes. if you read the book, you will know how it ends in the first five pages.
Right, right.
But, yeah.
So it's not much of a spoiler.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's a good book, good movie. Okay, your turn.
I don't know. I didn't think of anything.
Wow. It's only like 5 minutes
of
me
right.
speaking.
All right, so it's a music recommendation. I don't know if you guys like Christmas music. It's not like it's not your typical Christmas like
Jingle Bells.
Yeah, it's not a Christmas song. It's like a Christmas kind of mixtape, maybe. I don't know. Some of you may know like Chance the Rapper. He's like a very I don't want to say a Christian rapper, but he like doesn't rap about like things that are stereotypical rap, like rap about. Like he doesn't do that. So like him and an R&B singer collaborated for like a Christmas mixtape.
Interesting.
The mixtape is just a lot about like spending time at home with your family on Christmas.
Hmm.
And remembering a lot about like what Christmas is kind of really about.
Mm-hmm.
So I listened to it, downloaded it a few days ago, and it's like all I've been listening to for the last 2 days.
What's it called?
Oh my god. I think it's Merry Christmas, Lil Mama, and that sounds like a stereotypical rap album, but it's not.
I would classify Chance the Rapper. He does like gospel rap.
Yeah, he does. He does. He does.
I don't know if that's an official genre, but that is pretty.
Yeah, it's called Merry Christmas, Lil Mama Rewrapped. But like the person on the cover is like, it almost looks like a grandmother or a mom. So like it's kind of about like his family aspect. He's big into family and all that type of stuff. So if you guys have a chance, I'd listen to it. I mean, you're probably listening to this on the way to the Bragging Rights game. So once we end, turn on that mixtape and then come find me at the Bragging Rights game and we can talk about it. Boom.
I like it. Yeah, we put out this call a number of weeks ago during the football season, at the beginning of the football season. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast,
shoot us
emails.
Yeah, tweet.
Yeah. If you see us in person.
Talk to us, yeah.
And know who we are.
Yeah.
We do kind of live.
It might be kind of weird.
Lives of anonymity.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe scratch the part about coming up to us.
Yeah, I walk around a lot with headphones in. If someone tapped me when I had headphones in, I'd probably get scared. So maybe don't do that.
Okay,
I literally go to the store with headphones in my ears.
Electronics.
Yeah.
But we like to hear back from you guys.
Yeah, definitely.
Things that if you're interested, if you have feedback, things that you would like to see us do, then we would appreciate that too. So you can find us on Twitter at Daniel_M_Jones and at CJ_Teague. We'll have all your Mizzou football and basketball updates. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and you can read all the work that we do in the pages of the Tribune and at ColumbiaTribune.com.
It's been a minute since we've done one.
Yep.
So we'll do another after the Bragging Rights game.
Yep.
And then we will take another week off because I'm going on vacation after that.
Yeah.
So, and yeah.
Holidays get a little crazy.
Exactly, exactly.
But catch us back in 2018.
Yes, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
It'll be, as Jamon Moore says, it'll be lit. He said, you were gone. He said lit like 18 times this past week because he was talking a lot about him going back to Houston. First time he said it, his first media availability. Sorry, this is going long now. Somebody asked him, like, so what's it feel like to be going back to Houston? His only words, it's lit. I'm looking at the podcast.
It's lit.
It's lit.
Catch us in 2018. It'll be lit.
And subscribe to Mizzou Sports Podcast at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.